A ghost story in the Holy Land. Dedicated to my dad, James Travis Lisenby. He was the best storyteller. Around campfires late in the night, stories are often told of things that go bump in the night. Yarns of strange experiences, sightings of goblins and ghosts are all uttered as though they were actually true. Humbug! Let me tell you a real ghost story. The story begins many, many years ago in the mid-10th century B.C., an age where book learning, song, and poetic drama were flourishing. The Tehillot, the Psalms, were the central feature of the music. Hebraic literature was increasing and architecture was accomplishing one of its greatest feats. A magnificent, colossal building of some 40 acres, its massive stones decorated with dazzling artwork in ivory, wood, and gold. It is with this building that our story grows mysterious. This house was haunted, or should I say, possessed. On the day that this skyscraping edifice was completed, a gold coffin-like box was carried inside, and soon a dark, foggy apparition penetrated the new structure as though it claimed residence. There was no objection, of course, from anyone watching. After all, what could the people do? How does one serve an eviction to a ghost? I tell you, the place was haunted, or should I say possessed? Strange things would happen in this bizarre domicile. Separating the rear barracks from the frontage was a thick, heavy, dark curtain that hung from the ceiling to the floor, interwoven with images of celestial creatures with multiple wings and multiple heads. The spirit lived beyond the veil in the posterior berth. And should anyone dare to enter and cross the threshold of his dark lodge without a brazen bowl of fresh, chaste blood, and without an invitation to have a peek? Why, he mysteriously fell down dead. Perhaps the sight and or the smell of the vital juices appeased him, that is, the spirit. A legend even spun that a rope came to be tied to the leg of the brave souls who entered the lodge, so that if he collapsed, his fellows could pull him out of that house that was haunted, or should I say, possessed. There were spine-chilling tales of men who had witnessed the sound of this phantom breathing. There were eyewitness accounts of the massive hand-thick veil floating as a pendulum from the breath of the ghost behind the curtain. There was much suspicion, conjecture, and puzzlement among the men about the dark ways of this obscure spook and his display of aura. But well known and accurate was the insight to this ghost status in the spirit world. This spirit was indeed the granddaddy of them all. He was the heavy. For many hundreds of centuries, this haint confined himself to his habitation in the back room, or so it seemed to the generations who lived and died, passing on the stories to their posterity. Yet there was also a paradox. This ghost wanted to make an acquaintance with the people, although he was unapproachable and remote because of the blood thing. Then one day, it was early spring, a man appeared in the village of the possessed house. He was an ordinary man, medium height, sun-wrinkled skin, a pleasant fellow. Yet he was extraordinary. He was magnificent in humility, modest in condescendence, heavenly in demeanor, and so very kind. He was a holy man. He was wonderfully exceptional. But this man was for some reason ostracized from the community, grossly tortured, condemned to die, and he was nailed to a horribly ugly tree. And of all places, he was draped high in the sky upon a cross atop Skull Hill. At first, no one saw it. There was not even a hint of suspicion concerning this man and the haunted house and Skull Hill, just north of the gate to the possessed domicile. It wasn't until later that this tale was shown to be true, believe it or not. Whoever that man was who was dying upon that lofty and lonely hill, he had a supernatural link to the ghost of the 40-acre shrine. Simultaneously with the shriek of that man's death on Skull Hill and his soul ripped from his body, an earthquake shook the city, collapsed the haunted house, and that 5-inch thick heavy drape in that haunted house was completely ripped from top to bottom. That house was never again haunted, or should I say, possessed. More ghoulish was the missing corpse of the man who had been spiked to the tree, murdered by his enemies, and buried by his family. And after 3 days, his grave was as vacant as the former possessed house. Yarns, legends, stories, theories began to spin. Some said the man sat up in the grave, got up, and walked out. Others swore they had seen with their own eyes his funeral garb, meticulously folded, laying by his grave. Witnesses swore that he was seen with his family and his friends displaying his violent wounds about his head and hands and the hole in his chest. Some said that he had appeared to his friends by walking through a wall, and that he had spoken to them. And still others said they would never believe such a spook story unless they saw for themselves the holes in his hands and feet. For 49 days, people whispered tales. On the 50th day, followers of the martyred man gathered, not for a séance, but in memorial of him. They were singing and praying to God when suddenly lights appeared, flickering about the room. Everyone present heard a roaring sound of a gushing wind. And some ordinary, uneducated fellows from up north near a lake called Galilee began to speak the oracles of Elohim in languages they did not know and had not formally spoken. It was though they were possessed. In a papyrus-leafed book, an account of this ghost story was written by one of the locals, a physician. And doctors do not lie, don't you know? He recorded that the delightful holy man, who had been tortured and buried, and who had disappeared, was linked to the spirit of the former possessed house. The physician wrote that the ghost of the house was the one who had blown in, hovered above those in the room, had fallen upon them, and was presently occupying them. Yes, they were possessed. That spirit had taken up residence in everybody present in that room. Dr. Luke reported in his book, and his book is still being printed after 2,000 years, so it must be true, and every library and every bookstore has copies, that the ghost and the man were somehow interfaced. They were clones. Oh, that is spine-chilling, isn't it? They were clones. No one has seen that majestic man since his death. Though his friends claimed they had rendezvoused with him for 40 days on Galilee. The city, Jerusalem, rebuilt the formerly haunted, possessed house. But there have been no marks or indications that the spirit ever returned or that he ever will return to a house like that one. His presence is gone, at least from that house. However, the followers of that man have written scrolls testifying that the resurrected man is himself, the ghost, who is moving about the earth, seeking to inhabit those who will open their door to him, and that once he enters their domain, he will never leave or forsake them. Isn't this spine-chilling? Yet, what is interesting is that the resurrected fellow left us a message. Lo ira. Lo ira. Do not fear. Do not be afraid of ghost. Do not be afraid of ghoul. Do not be afraid of demon. Do not be afraid of phantom. Do not be afraid of apparition. Do not be afraid of spook. Do not be afraid of spirit. Do not be afraid of man. Do not be afraid of the darkness. The word is, he is himself alive. He is the ghost. And he wants to make your heart His house. His name is Yeshua.